David Bacher from Corian Capital. Lovely to, as always, be picking up with him on the movements in the markets on the past month. The Corian team put together a wonderful presentation that we go through here, which gives us, in a 20-minute discussion, all the information we need to know about what happened to investments in the previous 30 days. In this case, of course, we're looking at October. David, really good to be with you. We've had a couple of months in a row now where markets have been shooting the lights out, and then, well, not so much in October. It wasn't the best of performances when you take it as a whole, but then again, quite volatile as well.
It certainly was, Alec. Markets, as you know, don't go up in a straight line, and last month it certainly did a little bit of a correction. It actually started with enthusiasm, but as the month continued, the markets took more of a cautious turn. Around the world, stocks retreated, with emerging markets experiencing probably the more notable declines. And as you know, in times where risk off is on, gold and the dollar typically do well, and both were the only places really to hide.
What do you mean by that, risk off?
Risk off is when investors see data or forecasted earnings or future events that they believe they should be sitting on the sidelines. There's more selling as opposed to buying of riskier assets. So investors adopt a more defensive mindset and go almost into a preservation of capital mode as opposed to looking for growth.
And we have seen that gold has done well. It keeps hitting new records, but Bitcoin as well had a fantastic month. I'm just trying to reconcile that with risk off. Surely Bitcoin is a risk on asset.
Yeah, I'm by no means a Bitcoin expert, and I've been scratching my head about that for years. But Bitcoin is perceived for many holders as a store of value against inflation, against the deficit problems, a place where no matter what happens to governments and the value of money, they've got a different store of wealth. So from that context, it does make sense. Inflation came in a little bit hotter than most people expected last month in the US. And as a result, you know, that probably was the driver of the Bitcoin rally.
And I guess not surprising that people are worried about inflation, given both of the presidential candidates who are going to, well, Americans go to the poll on Tuesday. So by the time we come back together in a month's time, we'll know who the new president is. But either of them are going to increase the size of the budget deficit in America, which most people say is going to be inflationary. So no matter who wins, inflation is likely to get kicked higher.
Correct. It's actually quite staggering that. And if you think about, on the one side, the one candidate, Donald Trump, obviously pushing for lower taxes, corporate tax cuts, while Kamala Harris is looking more social spending. So either way, as you said, results in a higher deficit. And I think the market is starting to actually worry about that. You saw long-term inflation expectations kick up. So, you know, it's good for the markets over the short to medium term, but, you know, further down the line, are they just kicking the can?
Yeah, kicking the can down the road. That's what politicians love to do. A little less risque than last month, David. Election style, thank you. I didn't have any old Mother Grundy's worrying about doggy style, but still, election style is more our speed. It's all about the US election, though, isn't it?
Correct. This month, we're going a bit more conservative. We thought we'll shake things up last month. But yes, certainly this month is all about the US elections. It's a big event in the world. It shapes many things. What I find quite intriguing from a personal note is, you know, if you look at the two candidates or the two parties from just a capital perspective in terms of their economic policies, they're actually not that far apart as compared to other places in the world. So as compared to South Africa, you have, you know, very divergent views. They're both pro-capitalism, but yet it creates such fixation and such angst around the world. It's really fascinating to see.
Yeah, it's all just at the margins. And if you are an American Democrat, you are being branded in America as a socialist, even though in most parts of the world you'd be branded as a right-wing capitalist crazy person if you consider the policies there. But let's start off with the reason why the markets in the world were down. South Africa down 3.5%. Other emerging markets did even worse. China, India, 6-8%, those two. What is it? Is it really just a question of nervousness?
I think the main event, and we catch it later in the presentation, was that the US Treasury yields went up a massive 50 basis points. And the bond market is probably the most efficient telling market in the world. And when they move quite quickly, it does investors take note. And when inflation came in a bit hotter, we spoke about the deficits a bit earlier, higher US Treasury yields really mean that the market is worried about inflation. It means that interest rates are unlikely to be cut as much as everyone expected. And, when your interest rate expectations start to be more conservative, that has an impact on equity markets. And that was, we believe, the main driver for October and why markets across the board struggled.
And for those who aren't quite understanding the nuances here, higher interest rates are a reflection of investors saying the risk is more. It's a bit like, David, if you are a guy who's been unemployed and you go to the bank and you ask them to lend you money, they might lend you money, but they're going to charge you a higher interest rate because you're a bigger risk of not repaying that money than someone perhaps who's getting a steady income. Is that a fair parallel?
That certainly is. And there's also other examples of why interest rates are so important for the investment community. So as you said, higher interest rates makes it more difficult for consumers to borrow, makes it more difficult for consumption and spending from consumers. They have to tighten their belts. That affects corporates, and that obviously ends to potentially affecting companies' profitability, and hence share markets don't like it. But there's also, from a valuation perspective, when you have higher interest rates and you, as an investor, what you're trying to do is take future earnings and discount them back to today's value. When you're using higher interest rates, those values come down. So lower interest rates, just from a valuation perspective, is also a big driver in terms of how investors feel.
So it's not a surprise when interest rates tick back up. Generally speaking, they're supposed to be in a downward trend, but not so much in the month of October. Just take us through what happened to those interest rates, the 10-year Treasury yield in the United States, because this is I suppose you could call it the benchmark interest rate for the world.
Correct. The primary concern for investors in bonds and U.S. Treasuries is always inflation. If your inflation is high, then value you place on getting your money back in future comes down, and hence there's always an inverse relationship between the price of a bond and inflation rate. So when you see U.S. Treasuries moving, which started October at about 3.75 basis points and rose 50 basis points in just a month, that really is a telling move, and it's a move that's signaling that investors think maybe inflation is going to be a little bit stickier than they thought. And you actually did see a glimpse of that in the inflation print that came out, I think, in the middle of this month, where inflation came in, I think, a tad higher than the market was expecting.
And again, to put that into context, if you are earning 3.75% on a 10-year U.S. Treasury yield, as you were on the 1st of October, and you thought at that stage that inflation would be at 2%, well, that's 1.75% rather, positive. That's real, what they call real returns above inflation. But if you see the inflation rate coming in worse than 2%, then you want more for your money. So hence the increase then to 4.25%, as David has explained. Okay, and the U.S. economy, U.S. GDP, was expected to be growing at 3%. Here in South Africa, where we're bumbling along at, well, below 2, we would think 3 was phenomenal. And of course, it's a much, much bigger economy than South Africa's. But if you come in below, then they punish you. They're quite sophisticated, these markets in the U.S.
Correct. And the U.S. economic data was somewhat disappointing. And as you said, somewhat, I mean, 2.8% for us would be great. But, you know, what I find quite interesting is, you know, I read a recent survey of how the voters think of the U.S. economy, and over 50% think that they're in a recession. But there's only been one quarter since Joe Biden's been president that there has been a recession. So the economy has actually been really, really strong in the United States. But I think maybe the distribution of that economic wealth is what investors are actually going to be voting on.
Okay. You call it the MAGA caps. Well, MAGA, we know, is the Donald Trump, Trump group, Make America Great Again. This is weird. It's a weird philosophy when you're going along at about 3% economic growth rate compared with a lot lower elsewhere in the world, including developing countries like ours. But is the idea here that the MAGA caps, or mega caps, I suppose, to take away that play on the words, the Magnificent Seven, are going to benefit from a Trump presidency rather than a Harris presidency?
I think most people would agree that a Trump presidency would probably be better for the mega caps. Trump is very much pro-technology, AI, freedom of competition, less likely to do antitrust regulations, etc., and also just a lower corporate tax rates will be beneficial. So I think a Trump win will be good for the mega caps and good for U.S. tech in general.
I had a conversation this morning with Anthony Ginsberg, who runs Gins Global out of Los Angeles, and he was explaining that if Trump comes in, he's very likely to fire the antitrust czar, who doesn't like big tech companies buying smaller tech companies. And as a consequence of that, it's dried up the funding of the smaller tech companies, because if you haven't got an exit, well, then private equity is not going to put money in. However, he says that, and if Kamala Harris continues, well, then the antitrust czar will still be there. But if Donald Trump comes in, he's going to fire her and then bring in somebody who would allow these transactions to go. And then he reckons there would be a relief rally in tech stocks generally, because then suddenly the smaller stocks who've been waiting for deals might get them through. Do you think he's got a point?
I know, Anthony, and I actually never thought about it from that perspective. Obviously, I 100% don't care about the more direct impact on the larger companies. But I think if you think about his argument, that does make sense. There is certainly different ways for smaller caps to realize their wealth or their value. One is obviously just to grow and let earnings tick by year after year, and earnings generally result in increased share prices. And the other one is obviously corporate activity and mergers. So when the big fish are got their hands tied behind their back, then obviously that avenue of realization of wealth will dissipate. So yeah, I think he has a point.
On to the comparison between what's happened in 2024 and the best and worst years in the last 25. Just take us through that analysis, David.
What we're trying to just depict on this graph you're referring to is the dispersion of returns in the equity market. And over the last 25 odd years, the best year was close to 29%. I think it was 2013. We've had quite a few years close to that. And the worst year was obviously 2008, when the market was down close to 29%. So message number one, you're investing in equities, be prepared for volatility. It will happen. The volatility is one of the reasons why you get better returns over the longer term. And the second point we're depicting here is just how good 2024 has been. Year to date, the returns are actually after yesterday's 20.621%. And, you know, that's pretty much on track. If you look at how 2013 was, a very similar trajectory. And who knows, this might be another record-breaking year for equities.
On to the two candidates. Quite a big, there's a similarity between the two of them in that the budget deficit, whoever wins, as we said right at the outset, is going to grow. It seems strange, given that they are on opposite sides of the economic strategy approach. Just again, unpack that for us.
Well, yeah, we label this slide all about the deficit, and that is, in our opinion, the elephant in the voting room. And people aren't paying enough attention to that. And what you're trying to obviously do as a politician is speak to your voter. And Donald Trump's certainly banging the tax drum and the cutting tax, which as I said earlier, sounds good over the short term, but over the long term, you know, how is this deficit going to unwind, and how is future generations going to pay for that deficit? And you know, on getting to the same point, just a different route on the Democratic strategy, you're probably going to result in higher social spending. Neither way addresses the deficit, and you know, you feel for a politician, because I think probably what the right thing to do is to go to your electorate and say, listen, we've got a problem for our children and our children's children. We need to take care of the deficit. This means we have to tighten our belt. Very rational message, but unfortunately that doesn't win many votes.
Let's come home now. How did South Africa do in October?
Well, South Africa actually did quite well. You know, our equity market was down 1% in rands, 3.5% in dollars, approximately. Relative to emerging markets, that was actually quite good. So that didn't feel so good, and all our markets were down. Our bond market was down. Our property shares were down. But so were the global shares. In fact, they were down more. So we don't live in a vacuum. And relative to our peers, we did okay.
And some individual shares even did well.
Yeah, this is quite interesting. You know, we call this polytics, emphasis on the ticks. Of course, platinum shares in South Africa had a really, really strong month. Unfortunately, or I don't know if it matters, but it wasn't really much to do with what our local companies did. It was more to do with the potential for sanctions on Russia. The U.S. specifically has been asking its allies to put sanctions on Russia for platinum and palladium. Russia is a significant producer in the global market on those two commodities. South Africa is the other one. So, you know, we will benefit from their restrictions. And as a result, when it was announced, our platinum shares, being Sibanye, Implats, Northam, plus a few others, ran heavily.
On the other end, not everybody had a good month. I've been watching the Sasol share price in US dollars, and my goodness, it just doesn't seem to find a bottom.
No, it certainly has. Although I saw today's up strongly, but after a significant depreciation. You know, Sasol has announced during the month some further disappointing operating performance. The stronger rand against the dollar, you know, over the reporting period, the oil price hasn't been in their favor. Lower refining margins, you know, it's all impacting the Sasol business. And as a result, you know, that share has come off, I would say, about 33% over the last few months.
Mondi had a takeover in Europe, which clearly was not that much enjoyed by investors. That share price down more than 13%. And the decline, nearly 9% in BHP, anything there that you can point us to?
I didn't see anything come out that warrants that, other than I think that the overall decline in the copper price during the month starting to put some pressure on the stock. Copper is a big part of the resource and commodities basket, and hence the depreciation.
And looking ahead... Make puns great again. Help me through on that one, David. What are you telling us? He's like a great artist who's got something on their mind that they want to share with us, but we need to spell that one out a little more.
Well, in every report back or presentation for the month, we run with a theme. People have noticed us over the last couple of years. They know that we do like to make the odd pun. The mega caps that you referring to as mega caps, and just a bit of internal humor that we live by. So we just thought that, make puns great again instead of make America great again, as our caption on the last slide would create a couple of giggles. So, judging by reaction, we one out of one.
One out of one. There we go. And whatever happens, though, it's going to be quite a turbulent week next week. Whoever wins, there's going to be surely people who are saying that this election is not right and so on. What do investors do? Just close your ears and carry on?
I mean, there's different ways of investing. From a Corian perspective, we always look at valuation and try and look through the noise and the cycle. And that's what we generally do. In this case, for a lot of our portfolios, we do think that there is a very, very remote risk of people not accepting this election, and that leading to potential things that we saw on January 6th, 4 years ago. So from our side, we did actually buy some protection that's way out the money. Volatility is low, and volatility was low. You can buy it quite cheap. So we have some protection for very far out risk. We don't think that risk is likely to happen, but just to provide our clients with some protection, we have employed that in the majority of our portfolios. So I'm not saying that is going to happen, and we don't think that's going to be happen, but sometimes you've got to invest for what might happen, what you've underestimated in terms of probabilities.
David Bacher is the Chief Investment Officer at Corian Capital. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.